Systemic racism, police brutality, riots. This is all a topic of conversation since George Floyd was brutally murdered by four police officers.
It is time to get real and have an open and honest conversation about what many feel has become a racial divide in this country. And this is Chick to Chick. Carrie, I think people might want to grab a bucket of popcorn and maybe something to drink, because this is going to be a long conversation, but it warrants it. This is what we're calling Chick to Chick Extended Play. We're going to be talking for a long time about a very important conversation and about something that's happening in this country right now.
That's right, Flora. And the reason it's the extended play is because there's a lot of ground to cover. When you and I were talking about the state of our country when George Floyd was murdered, we had so many questions. We had so many things we didn't understand, and we really wanted to understand. So that is why we decided to have this conversation.
And honestly, you and I, we're both a little scared and a little bit nervous about this conversation. Worried about saying the right thing, the wrong thing. Maybe somebody's going to get upset by something that we have to say, but we are really just trying to get a greater understanding of what it's like to be Black in America.
Well, joining us today, we have Blake Lynch. This is a long title for you, Blake. I don't want to get it wrong. You are the Community Policing Liaison, Harrisburg Bureau of Police. Did I get that correct?
You got it. Just a guy that likes to help others and do good. So that works too.
You know what? I like that better. I'm not big about titles. You just cut right to the chase there. I like that a lot better.
Like, what is it like growing up in America? What was it like for you as a young Black man?
Well, I mean, my lifestyle, I'm really grateful that I had a loving mom and a loving dad. My father passed when I was three. So therefore I had a single mom growing up until she got remarried. And it was just her and I for many years. And in doing so, being a single Black female in America, it was hard for her. She did the best she could, and she got a lot of help from family. And together it took a village to raise me, and then her getting remarried and then having my younger brother, having a stepfather was great as well. And you had that family support. So I grew up born in the city, raised in a town called Steelton, right outside of Harrisburg. And then we moved up into the suburbs of a smaller town called Oberlin in Spot Arrow Township, for those who know the area, in Dauphin County. And that's where I was raised for about a good 15 years. And that was, again, the suburbs technically, but it was lower income suburbs. But I never knew that I was poor. I never knew that I was, you know, a lower socioeconomic status, because I had so much love around me. And my mom worked hard, and she did everything that she could to support my brother and I and our family. And that was just normal life for us. And so everyone around me was around that same economic class. Here or there, family was about the same. And yeah, you face different things. Everyone faces different things growing up, regardless of their skin color. But the good thing is that we are here in America. We do have opportunities, more so than other countries. And growing up in central Pennsylvania afforded me opportunities that a lot of other family in other states definitely didn't have.
I like what you said. You were surrounded by love. And I really, really think that makes a difference for a child growing up, regardless of where you are, or what community you're in. I really like that. You're a liaison with the community, with the Harrisburg Police Department. Why did you decide to join the police department, and what specifically do you do in your role?
Sure. It was a great opportunity. Prior to this, I served as director of development for Boys and Girls Clubs here in Central PA. So my job was to raise funds and lobby on behalf of the kids who need us the most. Here in and around Central PA. So responsible for raising over $1 million every year so our kids could have a safe place that they could come and play and eat and not have to worry about anything, and form lifelong relationships and friendships. I actually was a club kid growing up as well. I went to Boys and Girls Clubs in Steelton and also the location in Berry Hill, which a lot of people have grown up, attending as well. And so that was something where having the opportunity to come back and get back to an organization like the Harrisburg Police Department, who at times does not have a great, they don't do a great job at imaging and putting themselves out there in a positive light. Normally it's investigations and going from call to call to call. My background I went to school for was public relations and crisis communications. And then also understanding the community that I grew up in, having a lot of family in the city, I just saw it as a chance again to build a bridge, because although people may have negative experiences with those in law enforcement or city officials, that's not the majority most of the time. And any opportunity that we can grow together to move more positive light or get a better understanding of each other or solve quality of life issues, as I call them, that don't get a lot of attention, I think we should really try to double down on that.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's amazing what you're doing. And it kind of leads into what's going on right now. And that is people who are sort of debating between whether the Black Lives Movement is a civil rights issue, is it anti-police issue? You kind of spoke about all those types of things just now, but I really kind of want to go a little further, because we have protests, a lot of things that are really going on. It's much more heated. So what's your take on all of it?
Well, having been a part of many of the protests here in Harrisburg, especially, I was there the very first protests that were very peaceful in the beginning for about 3 hours I was there for. And then it turned a little bit later when outside people decided to come into the city and have destruction on their minds. Because again, there were pastors and little kids and white, black, Indian, gay, straight, everyone was at this protest, and it was peaceful for 3 hours, no problems. And then when outside agitators came in to try and they had trouble on their mind, it's just a simple way of putting it. That's what really changed course. And that's where we ended up with that first protest. But following that, we've probably had at least another 30 to 40 protests since then. There was just another community march this past weekend. It was for another issue. But I've been engaged in those talks, working with protest leaders, working with march organizers, calling them into the office, meeting wherever they want to meet to talk about their March 1st or the protest 1st. Myself, Corporal Hammer, my partner, Commissioner Carter, the mayor, we've all met with them before, many of the officials, trying to work towards progressive change. And we all want to see justice. That's what's most important. Everyone wants to see justice. And everyone wants to feel like they have a part to play in that. And that's really my role with the protests, working long hours to try and make sure everyone's safe. So whether we were trying to help them and guide them along march routes that were safest, us providing security for them, us providing, as us, I say, the Harrisburg Police Department, the officers, blocking streets so they could walk the streets instead of sidewalks because they were going to spill on the streets anyways. A lot of people don't talk about that. So our agency, we took a hands-on approach to double down and get to know the organizers and protesters more. We've had several dozen meetings with them individually, and we're working towards them on issues that really matter to them and how, again, we can all work towards justice. So,
yeah, you pointed out the peaceful protests, and then you said these outside agitators. There is a big difference between the peaceful protests and rioters who are causing so much destruction and burning buildings and destroying communities, which I personally don't understand it. I don't understand what the point of doing that. What message can you send to people who are causing this type of destruction and violence? What's the message that you'd like to send to them?
Positivity always wins. Done. That's it. Positivity always wins. Good always beats evil. And although it might be a long time that we tarry towards it, it's going to overall happen. It's going to happen. And good will prevail. And so this might be a long game approach, but that's the peaceful approach that we have at the department. We have not done anything. We did not pepper spray anyone as an agency. We've never done anything which you may have seen in other cities or towns, which we, you know, there are plenty of opportunities to do so, rightfully so. But our commissioner and our command staff de-escalated many situations for many weeks. And our fire chief and others worked towards some of those things with those agitators. And that's why you didn't have those things happen in Harrisburg that you see in other cities.
I want to take a minute and sort of go back to maybe it's more of a history or a better understanding. When we talk about Black people, we talk about African Americans. Sometimes I don't know which word to use. I really don't. Do I refer to someone as Black? Do I refer to them as African American? Help me out here.
I think we're not a monolith. It depends on, you know, who has a preference there, honestly, Carrie. And I mean, you'll have others who are actually from Africa, who are offended, who are from Nigeria, who are from Egypt, who are from Uganda. They, you know, we are Africans, we're not African Americans, or even those who are Black from the Caribbean, who are Jamaican, who, you know, are Dominican, who are Black. So it's really, as you get to know people, I think it's really the preference that they may have. So
how do you do that then? So if you're having a conversation with someone, or we even see it in the media, they refer sure. to a mass of people as Black. They refer to them as African American. And I guess from what you just said now, I look at that and I think, well, that's lumping a group of people into a group where they don't belong. How do we work through that?
Well, I think, again, it comes down to individual. It's a long road ahead. I don't speak for the entire Black community. For me, I say I'm not offended with the word Black. That's who I am. I'm not offended by African-American. My descendants are from Africa many generations ago. But that's almost like me calling you Irish American or Panamanian American or wherever you may be that you would like to identify as. So just think about that. How many generations ago did your ancestors come from, and what predominant country did they come from? Then you have to go back to that. So a lot of people don't know where they came from in Africa because our history was destroyed. It was beaten out of many people, was destroyed. So, unless you do a 23andMe or something like that, a lot of people don't know.
So, you know, oftentimes I've heard the word marginalized, that Blacks, African Americans have been marginalized. And I'm not sure if people really understand what that means. And does marginalized go hand in hand with systemic racism?
Well, I mean, it's a real thing. You know, every system in the world has flaws. And, you know, when you're brought to a place that, you know, you're not, you don't come willfully to, you're brought here in bondage, that's completely different than having the option of doing so and then enslaved for over 400 years of free labor. So all those things come together in making what systemic racism is. But again, every system has flaws. And I think the main part is that we work towards a better America and a better world. And how do we figure that out and accomplish it together?
That's $1 million question. How? I mean, how do we? Is it the conversation we're having today? You know, people asking questions, and people, I mean, white people asking questions of their Black friends. How does that work?
It comes down to relationship. It comes down to conversations. And in doing so, that's how we're going to work towards it. It's going to take an effort from everyone to actually want to see this all come together and happen, and a willingness to do so.
I worked very closely with a Black man, and he was very, very successful. And he would often say to me that he took a lot of grief from members of his community because he was a success, and other members of the community were not. And he said that he often would hear things like, "You're a sellout. You're turning your back on us." Have you encountered that from members of your own community? You're clearly a very successful Black man. Have you encountered that? Have you experienced that?
I think what it comes down to is you're always going to have people who, and naysayers, no matter what you do or say. And I think that speaks to the small-mindedness of a lot of people, or the insecurities in themselves. You'll see successful people never downing other successful people because they're too busy doing what they need to do to help their communities and their families. And that's really what I stay focused on a lot of times.
So then how do you deal with that when you do hear these negative comments from the naysayers and saying you're a sellout? How do you deal with it?
I think the big thing is having a great support system around you. And if that's something that, you know, occurs or happens to you, I'm sure, you know, maybe both of you have experienced similar things just for being women, successful women, especially in a male dominated industry. Those are things I think we all can speak to that degree. And if we're able, again, to overcome it with having strong mentors or family members or therapists or an outlet, which allows us to de-stress, I think those things help.
Do peers of yours, and by peers, I mean Black men in your age group, do they look at you and say, Blake, you don't sound Black enough, or Blake, you don't have a Black name? Have you ever gotten flack like that?
Well, the thing about it, actually, Carrie, is, you know, when you're young, that's just called bullying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, playing the long game on it and positivity, always winning, that's just been a mantra of mine and my family's. And so that's how we got through the bullying phase of elementary school and, you know, high school. But now, you know, when you fast forward, you know, 20 years later, you know, it's a little different now.
Look at me now, right?
I mean, I didn't say that, but it's more of again, positivity winning. And it's not because I'm better than anyone else. It's just because I focused on what do I want to accomplish. It's because the visions and the dreams and the inspirations that I have in my heart to help people and do good were reflected back and reciprocated. And I think when you double down and again, work on good and focus on good and help others, that is brought back to you in just a big circle. And people have to understand that. So yeah, negativity out, you're going to get negativity back. Positivity out eventually comes back, just like a boomerang.
Let's talk about the whole issue of police brutality within the community. Is this a real problem? Is this a big problem, or are we just seeing isolated incidents across the U.S. that are being magnified?
I think what it is you're really seeing issues that have happened with policing. That's true. I can't speak for every officer because I'm not an officer. B, I work for one agency, which does an amazing job at training and working to build bridges in our community. We are such a diverse and urban police department, and our officers are trained tremendously, weeks upon weeks of training every year. Other agencies don't have that. And I think, unfortunately, that's where you might see these random videos come up. It's rare that you see, of the thousands and thousands of police stops or thousands of engagements, you'll see these videos that do come out and are real from smaller agencies. Rare do you see anything from NYPD or you know, Las Vegas police or Harrisburg police who deal with diverse communities, because our officers, whether they're white or Black or Hispanic, know how to have conversations most of the times with people because they know their community. Unfortunately, it's when you interact and engage with others that are not reflective of yourself, or you may not have that experience in dealing with some type of situation like that, whether not having training or the experience or exposure, that unfortunately some of those things occur. And, you know, a lot of times it's tough being a police officer, being around them every day, they have to make decisions. And then also there's always a camera most of the times in their face. And I'm not talking about their body cam. I'm talking about other people at scenes. And imagine you going to work with a camera in your face every day. Well, you did, but for another light, for you doing other things. I mean, when the main camera's off, you know, walking around the studio or walking around the office, there's a camera always on you. And that's hard because our senior officers didn't have that. So they got to make, you know, they got to make mistakes and learn, as you would with any job or career. But younger officers, that's what makes it intimidating to even get into the profession, because you're judged. You're not really allowed to make those mistakes and growing, unfortunately, in the career.
So it sounds like you are adding a little bit of credence that we've got 1,000 incidents that were handled properly, but maybe one that wasn't handled properly, and it gets magnified. And it seems like it's an indictment on police everywhere, when maybe that's not really the case.
I find that to be true. Again, I can't speak to every situation of every video that's ever happened. Sometimes it is you know, you question like, what the heck, most times when you're looking at it in a certain light, and sometimes it's just unjustifiable, you know. And I've talked with many officers who've been in it for years, and they're just like, no, or I would have approached that differently. Or they say, I don't want a Monday morning quarterback. But this was a situation, maybe I would have handled it differently. And I think that's with any profession, you'll have that. And there are people who maybe should not be in the profession, just like there should people who should not be in the Catholic Church. And there are people who should not be coaches of wrestling teams. And there are people who should not be doctors, probably malpractice. Every profession has those unfortunate situations and things that happen. And policing, you know, is one of those. I think it's held in such high regard because they are sworn to protect and uphold the law, and not just the law, but also a moral standard as well. And that's kind of skirted by on other professions. You know, there's people who still haven't gone to jail who caused a financial crisis, you know, embezzled billions of dollars and still haven't sat in a jail cell. And there's people who have sold and distributed a drug that is legal in many states, but are doing minimum sentencing. There's a problem with that. That's what people have an issue with.
And I want to be clear, there, even one case of police brutality is not justified. And I didn't want to come across that way in any way. It's just a shame that we don't hear about the thousands of cases where police are handling situations properly and following protocol. So I just wanted to be clear about that. I'm not justifying, because even one case is one case too many.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I hear from some of my friends who either have Black sons or mixed race sons, and they're really worried. Is this something that is coming off as it's targeting? Are some officers looking for situations that don't exist?
I can't speak to every officer and every agency. I really can't, or every person. I would hope not. And the officers that I worked with here in Harrisburg absolutely don't represent those values, nor do we as an agency. So again, I can't speak to every situation every time, but I can tell you the officers I work with every day, you know, they work hard to solve crimes. They work hard with people who don't want to, you know, call it snitching. Although in them giving information, it would save the community so much anguish and shots fired calls and overdoses, you know, and they work through and they get it done and they bring justice to those grieving families. And so when they're working hours and hours on hand at crime scenes in the rain, or they're out risking their lives, you know, or firefighters are responding to a car accident with injuries, I mean, putting out fires, it's countless. I can tell you from the city, I've watched people die in front of me. That's something you'll never forget. So imagine being a police officer going for call to call to call and going from a homicide to an overdose to a check fraud to a car accident with injuries to another overdose to a baby death in the same night for 25 years.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
So that's what our officers are facing, unfortunately, at least in here in the city and in other departments as well. So yes, you know, they're just sworn to protect and serve. And to serve our community well. And, you know, reading books to kids and McGruff the Crime Dog and giving out ice cream is fantastic. But the part of the job that is hard is making those decisions. And unfortunately, when you're tasked with enforcement of the law, that's something people don't like.
We hear a lot, too, about we need to defund the police. Is that really something we need to be doing?
I think I really wish that someone would have retagged that better and just said, people want to have a conversation about reallocating resources for better outcomes for their community. That's basically what defunding the police is. You know, not talking about zeroing out budgets, but just moving money around for better training, for more community resources, you know, so that their communities are heard. And every department is different. The same needs that the city has are not the same needs of other townships or even other city agencies. You know, the mayors and, you know, council members of those towns and boroughs know their community best. And so whatever works best for them should be reflected in the budgets appropriated to their departments.
So there are two words that I think have gotten people really fired up. And I got to admit, I got fired up too. It's white privilege. And yeah, Flora says her too. So I started hearing a lot of this, especially right after George Floyd was brutally murdered. And it was something that I took such offense to, I have to tell you, Blake, because I felt like I had to defend myself. Like, I worked hard in college and I didn't get a job for any other reason than blah, blah, blah. And I just constantly felt like I was defending myself. So I did some work and I looked at the word and I read up on it and I really tried to understand it better so I wasn't so angry at white privilege. And what I found was that it came down to something I think is simple, sort of, and I want you to work this out for us if it's not. And that's basically my skin color. I am white, and therefore there's a privilege because of the history of our country because I'm white. So am I right?
Yeah. Okay. That's really it. That's true. That's what it is. And, you know, but one thing I do want to say is that, you know, when you said you felt that you had to defend yourself and it wasn't you directly, and I could understand that as well. And I spoke to a little bit earlier as well when I said that not all Black people are a monolith. And I think you could say the same thing about white as well, where you were like, hey, I had to work hard for mine. And that's not the case. Not saying you didn't, just being afforded opportunities that you normally don't get, you know, that are just given to you. It's almost like an entitlement. And it's nothing you did to deserve, that you did to earn it. You just received it because of others prior to you based on the color of your skin. And it's not a personal attack. You know, but again, you're not all white people are the same. So therefore that, you know, feeling of, you know, hey, you know, I worked hard too and I went to college. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can shift that over to, again, industry and business, male dominated industry. Let's look at our corporate boards. Let's look at nonprofit boards. You know, there's a lot of men in those positions when women make up a majority of the workforce, especially in a lot of different sectors and industries. So is that male privilege?
Yes.
I mean, right.
Yeah.
So privilege is a real thing. You know, so how do we move towards changing that to be reflective of the community that we want to see? And if it is ensuring that people are properly vetted and those who do qualify for certain jobs and, you know, or in certain positions of influence are promoted or work hard towards it, they should be afforded those opportunities and not blocked by the color of their skin or their, you know, sexual orientation or, you know, the way they choose to worship. I think those are all things that's why we have anti-discrimination laws in place.
Do you think that it would be a good idea if it was taught in school? Because I feel like I would have a better understanding of so much more if I understood that my skin color unfortunately already put me ahead and that maybe I would have thought differently. And I would have looked at my Black friend next to me and went, well, that's not right. Like, what if I learned that early in my life? What do you think that that would play a significant role in how children eventually grow up and see each other?
I think that if families don't take it upon themselves to identify those things to teach their children, that is really what speaks more volumes. But then again, it's exposure and opportunity and access. If you grow up in an area that doesn't have a lot of Hispanic or Indian or Black or gay people, you don't know how to have those conversations and you only see what you see on TV. And that's where fear comes in. And that's where, you know, white flight comes in. And that's where a lot of things come in because they're just, people just aren't exposed to different things. And the reverse, African-Americans aren't, you know, exposed to, you know, rural communities and not exposed to a lot of other things. Some people have never left their blocks, let alone this city. So it can be taken both ways. I think, again, exposure is huge. And if our kids can have exposure, it takes our parents, the parents, myself, you, to have those conversations with your children and with your nieces and nephews. That's really what's going to change the world. I can't, you know, have a teacher in school who's supposed to be teaching curriculum. And my tax dollars are going towards you paying and teaching my kid about curriculum to then talk about social issues as well No, that's a family matter, I think, that should be incorporated as well.
It's a little hard to hear it, though. I don't feel like I had any privilege or entitlement through my life being the child of Italian immigrants. I went through my own form of discrimination. I was called derogatory names growing up. We were frowned upon. We were looked at differently. We did not have a lot growing up. You know, I was the daughter of a poor immigrant, and I did go to college. I struggled at every turn, and I don't feel like I had any type of a privileged upbringing. I really don't feel that I did. And while I hear what you're saying, just because I am white, I have this privilege that you don't have. I don't personally feel that there was anything privileged about my life. Everything that I have, I worked for, I worked hard for. Nobody handed me anything. And I had to overcome other obstacles as well, being a woman and being overlooked on particular jobs, pay disparity issues. I just don't feel privileged. I don't.
And Flora, I understand your point. Absolutely. And that's why I preface it by saying that, you know, all white people are not a monolith. It's not system. It's not a whole group of people where everyone that I've ever met has this. No, not the case at all. And the same with for Black people. I mean, a lot of people would say the same thing. Blake, you've got privilege. You've got favor on different things. And maybe I do. Maybe there were decisions that were made before I walked in the room that I have no idea about. And I have favor or privilege and I received it. I don't even know. Who knows? And, you know, maybe the same applies for you as well. Again, I didn't do anything to deserve some of these things, but maybe they were graced upon me by, again, someone speaking favorably before I ever walked in a room. Maybe there was a vote taken before I showed up. Who knows? But what I'm saying is you're not a monolith. I'm not saying anyone just has an easy card in life at all. But, you know, it is true that some people, because of the color of their skin, have been given opportunity or the wealth of their families that their parents worked hard towards that their children don't, which is everyone's, you know, aim. You want to make sure your kids do better than yourself. That's true. I want the same for my children. You know, I have two young boys. I want to work hard so that I can teach them the lessons I learned that they don't have to experience and they can then advance for their family as well. And that's just legacy. And I don't see anything wrong with that. But, you know, white privilege, we can work to negate some of that. And as we're talking about these issues, now that we know, again, that way they resonate and we make sure that doesn't happen for our future generations or work towards that. That's all I was saying, you know, and it's Carrie's fault. She asked the question.
Well, I did, but I asked it in honesty because I feel like it just, what I had learned was, you know, it comes down to simply the color of your skin. If I roll up into a room next to a Black woman, instantaneously, there is a different vibe or a different look or whatever from that person who is going to either interview us, talk to us, whatever. It could be a Black person that I'm interfacing with, and they're going to be more inclined to go with the Black friend that's next to me, or a white person, and they're going to more be inclined to go towards me because I'm white. So that's all I was talking about. That's how I understood it to be. But another pressing question while we're on them, Flora, sure. You want to take this one?
I do. I think this is your favorite girl, Candace Owens.
Really?
For many people who don't know who Candace Owens is, she is a very conservative Black woman. She was liberal. She's now a conservative Black woman. And she says things like, Blacks play the race card. She says things like, Blacks play the victim card. And she says things like, Blacks need to take more responsibility. And it's not really about police brutality. Maybe it's about behavior issues, and maybe it's about resisting arrest. I'd love for you to tackle each and every point that I just brought up.
I need some popcorn.
Carrie.
Woo! Take it away, Blake.
Because I appreciate all of you. what I will do is I will yield my time back to the interviewer. Because look, I said something a little earlier. We talked about crab and barrel mentality. We talked about other Blacks talking about each other who are successful. Again, I honestly don't have any time to spend on someone who's doing something that they like to do. That's what makes America a place that is so free and deserving, is that you have the right to free speech. And I'm not going to tread on anyone's right to have any type of conversation or say what they want to say. If that's the way she feels, that's the way she feels. I know how I feel. I know what I do for my family and for my community, and working hard and trying to assist and represent our officers who serve and protect every day, and also the community that faces many systemic and economic disparities that are struggling to get through and having to worry about shots fired through their windows at night, and homelessness and hunger pains, and kids getting access to Wi-Fi because they are in virtual classrooms due to a pandemic. I have more pressing issues to deal with than that. No disrespect to you, but that's just, she doesn't have to worry about some of those things like some of us do here in Central PA.
I respect what you're saying. Would you just deal with maybe the one issue where she says maybe it's more about behavior issues and resisting arrest that we should be talking about, that versus police brutality? Does she have a point?
No. I won't answer that, and no, absolutely not. She can do whatever she would like to do, and if that's the way she feels, that's the way she feels.
Fair enough. I respect all of that. You just to bring this amazing conversation to a close, Flora and I so appreciate you taking the time to answer questions that we have and be very candid and open. So my question is to the people who are listening and watching, what can they do? Do they need to get out of their bubble? You know, what kind of conversations should they be having? How do we heal this divide in our country, starting with our neighbors and those who are close to us?
Well, I mean, it really takes a concentrated effort on internally to have a moment of self-reflection. If that's something they want to do, if people want to change, they'll change. If they don't, they don't. And you can't force change upon anyone. Because look, everyone said the same thing about the internet. They said it's a fad, it's going to go away. And yeah, it hasn't. Now everyone who talked about phones and cell phones and Y2K, we're using phones right now to communicate. Technology isn't going away. They talked about the Facebook, as my grandmother calls it, the Facebook, the Twitter bird, as my grandmother calls it. She hears about the president on the Twitter bird. So
grandma's on the Twitter bird. So that's pretty cool.
Grandma hears about the president on the Twitter bird.
I got you.
Because of television and CNN or whatever it is. So look, change is going to come, whether you're for it or not. It's just going to happen. And if you don't want to be part of the change that is coming forward, or you don't want a part to play in shaping the country that you want to see, or the state or the community you want to reside in, there's nothing you can really do. But I implore people to have conversations with someone that doesn't look like them, just to say, hey, I'm not asking anyone to break things down and solve, world peace. But if you do say something, say hi at the coffee shop, or just, if you have some friends of other races, I'm not saying to break down, the family history, but, just small talk leads into longer conversations, leads into conversations over wine. And then now your kids are best friends. I'm telling you, eventually it will get there. And again, you'll find something about someone that you didn't know that maybe you didn't, couldn't even imagine. Like, Carrie, do you know that I like to fly and I'm working on my pilot's license?
No, but when will we be invited to go up in the air?
We'll have that conversation off camera.
Sweet. That's very cool, Blake.
There are a lot of things.
And I'm okay if you don't invite me. I'm okay with that.
Flora, I had something else for you. I mean, do you know that my wife and I love to go to the Finger Lakes and go to other places and drink wine?
I love that. Can I go?
Absolutely.
Why can't we fly to the Finger Lakes for wine?
I have friends that have homes in the Finger Lakes that fly out of the area and go.
Road trip.
So
I think what you're saying here is open mind, open heart. Let's get to know each other.
Yeah.
I think absolutely. That's what your message is. And I like that message. And Blake, we cannot thank you enough for this very open, honest, and candid conversation. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity. And it's been a joy getting to know both of you.
Thank you.
All righty. Thanks, Blake.
See ya.
Flora, I don't know about you, but I feel like this conversation makes me feel better. I feel like the fact that Blake was really honest and he really listened to what we were asking. And I think we had a really good conversation. And I do feel like I have a better understanding. And more importantly, I really appreciate and respect the fact that Blake took the time to really have the conversation with us.
Yeah, it was a great conversation. And you hit on two very important words: understanding each other and respecting each other. And I think ultimately, if we have a better understanding and a greater respect for each other, we're going to achieve peace. And I think that's what everyone wants. So it was great to have Blake on. And it was great that all of you have tuned in to our Chick to Chick extended play. We're all over social media. You can get in touch with us there. You can also go to our Chick to Chick website, chicktochick.com at the very top. There's a tab that says contact. You can send us an email, share your thoughts, and let us know what you want us to chirp about. So again, thanks for tuning in, and we will be back next week to chirp about another topic.